Hello again and welcome to ISCO Insights Podcast. So glad that you've joined us. My name is Sean Moth. We were thrilled to have Mike James on last time, uncovering some of the mysteries about large diameter pipe. We're just as thrilled, if not more, to be joined by staff engineer and gas standards at CenterPoint Energy, Ed Cooper. Ed, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you taking some time to join us.
Absolutely welcome. Glad to be here.
So let's just start with your background a little bit. How in the world did you get into this world of electrofusion and gas distribution?
So I'm a mechanical engineer from the University of Evansville, and actually started my career in underground mining, hoisting and elevators. Kind of worked on a lot of the slope hoist and elevators for coal and MSHA, metal, non-metal, and kind of had a career change, kind of had a lot of travel. Gone West Virginia, East Kentucky a lot, and family was growing. My first daughter was born, and it was time to get a little closer to home. So I got a great opportunity with a legacy CenterPoint Energy company, and just got deep into the market.
Tell me about your evolution at CenterPoint into your current position, because I'm sure there were some steps that were taken over the course of time.
You know, it's a really interesting story that Vectren was the legacy company, and they created the position of gas standards engineer, and I was the first and have been the first and only, have just evolved the position into CenterPoint.
Was it difficult to go into a position that didn't have a blueprint? It's actually something I've done, and I found that there was kind of a liberating feeling to it, but at the same light, you couldn't go back and see, well, how'd the other guy handle it?
You know, that's very interesting you said that, and it's been told to me, and you know, after the fact that I was hired because I had no gas experience, and I wouldn't come in and say, well, here's how we used to do it at the previous company, or here's a predetermined disposition, which is really interesting in the gas industry.
Yeah, so let's just get an overview of electrofusion and maybe where we're at now. How much has it permeated? What is the status of electrofusion right now?
Sure, so my take on it's really interesting because as I came in the industry in 2011, there was four or five different approved heat fusion methods, mechanical and heat fusion. And as we were looking into, you know, cleaning up and becoming a little more lean, we kind of harnessed in and focused in on electrofusion. It became the approved go-to method, and we eliminated multiple other conventional methods. We eliminated the training, we found efficiencies, reduced O&M, and by standardizing on electrofusion. So the Indiana-Ohio region of CenterPoint has been majority electrofusion and some butt fusion since 2012. So where we are today as an industry, which is interesting, you know, I'm on ASTM F17 committee, and I've got an open project to write a new electrofusion standard for the industry, and kind of taking some of the successes of the butt fusion industry using the PPI TR33 and then the ASTM F2620 and all the work those experts have done to kind of meld the two standards together. We're going to do the same thing with electrofusion. We're going to bring together an industry recognized manufacturer and user group standard that's going to harmonize our joining methods and hopefully create this this standard that all utilities can use. We can all use the same joining method, and we can use multiple different brands of electrofusion interchangeably.
Fantastic. What's been the biggest change in terms of the evolution of electrofusion?
You know, I'd say that there's been a few new or new to the U.S. Electrofusion manufacturers that have come around in the 10 plus years I've been doing this. I would say that the quality and the standards of the product is probably what has come around is the ISO quality control. I would also say that dimensional tolerance and that utilities themselves, end users, are doing their own lab testing and are doing a lot of verification and proving that the product is what it says it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still new to the HDPE world and the electrofusion world, but I heard you say in the U.S., kind of as an aside, it's kind of astonishing to me how far behind we are as a cutting-edge country to look and see how widely HDPE has been used overseas.
Sure. So what overseas is called PE100, right?
Sure.
And here we, you know, HDPE or 4710 is what we refer to it. But yes, it's the predominant market. You know, a gas utility majority of the U.S. is using a medium density, which would be, I think, a PE 80, and it's not very prevalent in overseas. And so really for us, and for me, Indiana, Ohio region of center point, we are all HDPE. We're all 4710 for a lot of reasons. But I think I see that the HDPE has come a long way. And I think every day we get closer to the utility industry being more 50-50 MDPE versus HDPE.
Well, and I guess that leads me to my next question. HDPE is very widely used. Why?
So really, I think the big expansion was with the 4710, the bimodal resin. Some of the unimodal resins of the past had some weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so the 4710 being bimodal has a lot of great performance characteristics. Also think you're going to find that there's lots of resin manufacturers, and then you combine those with lots of extruders or molders, so molding fittings and extruding pipe, and you're going to find that creates this matrix of protection for an end user. So you think about all the hurricanes and tsunamis and tornadoes, yeah. And then you have force majeures and supply chain disruptions. And what you'll find is us as utility are better protected from these massive roller coaster rides when we have a good mix of resin and suppliers.
And it seems that oil and gas has accepted HDPE kind of ahead of a lot of the other end markets in the U.S. for transmission and distribution of oil and gas. Can you speculate as to why?
Well, obviously, it's got a higher strength ratings, yeah. Right? So you can do more pressure, more flow. You can use it in a wider range now. In the gas utility industry, especially for the company I work for, is we underutilize the high-performing asset. So we can take pressures up to 125 PSIG for natural gas, but most of the times we run a 60-pound MAOP. So we feel as though that we are underutilizing this high-performing asset, and it's kind of an extra safety force.
Can you speculate, and maybe this is out of the purview, but can you speculate as to why municipal water and sewer and some of these other end markets are maybe a little bit behind oil and gas when it comes to utilizing HDPE?
Well, and this would be my unprofessional opinion.
Yeah, but very professional.
So I would say that if you have a leak in a water market, you have a mud puddle, right? And if you have a leak or uncontrolled spill in the oil and gas gathering and gas distribution, you have a serious safety or environmental concern. And so I think when it comes to integrity of our system, you want to use the highest performing asset you can.
Yeah, which it kind of adds to the intrigue as to why they are maybe a little bit behind, because if it is safe for oil and gas, it makes sense that it would be safe for the other. This is a terrible way to frame it, but I want to talk about failures in electrofusion. What is crucial to avoid those failures?
Well, obviously, we've talked a lot about a high-performing product in HDPE, and so with a high-performing product, you have to make a high-performing joint, right? And so a lot of the times, we see that electrofusion and butt fusion is as strong, if not stronger, than the pipe itself. And so when we see that, it's really up to the operator. So there's, to kind of get in the weeds, there's yeah. variables in a heat fusion. There's pressure, there's temperature, and there's time. And so when you think about electrofusion, the pressure and the time is taken care of for you by the electrofusion processor. Obviously, the tolerance of the fitting and the makeup. But the issues really come back to that the operator must follow the written procedures, operator being the qualified person.
Sure.
Needs to follow the written procedures because they're there for a reason. And that the adherence to those steps and cleanliness will create a joint that is stronger than the pipe itself.
Yeah, the alcohol, the peeling process yeah. and all that. What are some of the tools? I know you focused on the workforce, and obviously as training is a big part of what ISCO does, but what are some of the tools that kind of help that execution to be sure that you're doing it the right way?
Sure, I mean, I'd say the peeler, and even using the term peeler is interesting because when I started in the industry, and again, there's a lot of industry experts that may be listening to this, and I was at the ASTM meeting last week around a lot of these very seasoned experts. When I started, it was scraping.
Okay.
To talk about scraping.
Yeah.
But when you think about a consistent peel, you can think about a consistent ribbon of material that is consistent from the beginning to the end of your fusion zone, that's a peeler.
Sure.
And that the adoption of peeling in the industry is crucial. Because it's consistent and it's even and it's the same every time, right?
Consistent. Yeah.
And so I think the peeler to me is what is the most crucial tool that we use to prepare the fusion. And then obviously the fusion processor to complete it.
Yeah, somehow I get that image of grandma with the paring knife taking care of that that apple. And it's an interesting kind of a metaphor of it. The Highland Supercell processor, this is a new evolution. I know in our Insights blog, we were able to kind of dig into the advantages. And I think from a sustainability standpoint, it jumps out right there in and of itself because you eliminate the generators. Sure. You're allowed to work consistently. And we could do an entire podcast about that. But you wanted some early access to that piece. Tell me why.
Sure. So when you think about the approved fusion processes for Indiana and Ohio at CenterPoint, and we were all electrofusion and butt fusion, it puts up hundreds of thousands of electrofusion joints in the ground every year, and we've got lots of in-house and contract staff that they're busy. They're doing lots of miles. And so when we think about the equipment that they need to be productive and efficient, that cutting the cord, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not having to deal with the generator, cutting the cord. And a lot of times we sit in an office in a nice collared shirt and we talk about field procedures, but there's no one dragging mud into those meetings because they're not from the field.
Yeah.
And so I like to take the approach that we go to the back alley easements where the crew truck won't fit in the alley. It's too wide. We go to where the service comes in behind the house and you can't get there. So you take a product that is a battery, fusion, electrofusion equipment, and now you're able to be mobile. Weighs half as much as some of the other battery power stuff. So we talk about safety and for our guys and ensuring that they're using proper lifting and pulling methods. But when the processor weighs half of some of the other equipment,
It's a briefcase.
Yeah. That's right.
So it seems like the bigger benefit to the Highland Supercell is that, like you kind of touched on, the accessibility. But the reality is that it can be applied to an entire job. And really, because of its charge and because of how much work it can do, do you see the growth of that piece of equipment expanding because it is so efficient?
Yeah, so we've got two things here. We've got capability is in the size of the fittings it can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've also got then the amount of capacitance that it has. And what's interesting about it is, the lead acid batteries of the old fusion processors, they follow a curve. The more they dissipate, the less capacitance they have. Well, lithium ion in the supercell doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
It has as much capacitance in the last 10% as it does in the first 10%. So not only now do you have this wider range of fittings that you can do, but now you also have the capacitance. So we have service crews who can do tapping tees and 1-inch, 2-inch couplings, and they can use it all week without charging it.
Mm.
What's also interesting about it is you never know where you are in capacitance level. Like, we all drive to work every day.
Sure.
You see what the gas gauge says.
Yes.
Or you know how many miles you've driven since you last filled up. Previous technology doesn't have the ability to know where you are in capacitance, where the supercell does provide you with percentage. And it also tells you about how many fittings of that type it'll do. So it really does give the operator, the qualified personnel, the insight to know, hey, I can start this job and I can finish this job.
Do you envision the advancement of that type of technology to get into some more larger diameter pipe? And I almost even trying to speculate in my head, is there a way to use that lithium ion technology to be able to heat a plate and perform butt fusion without a generator? Do you see that technology coming down the road?
Absolutely. So a lot of the lithium ion, even in the marine industry, is about cutting weight and increasing capacity and having stable power. Motor racing, same thing, less weight, less track time, so yes, I see there is also a fine balance between reliability of the equipment and its application.
Sure.
And a lot of times you say, well, you won't have to have a generator for that, but if you've also have a generator running a pump in a ditch that's going to run to pump water out of a hole, you've already got one there.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fine balance. I think we've also spoke about in our crews that it's not a one size fits all always.
Sure.
If you're going to do 8-inch or 12-inch couplings all day long, having a steady current and power source may be a better application, heat dissipation in the processor. But for the wide range and the sizes that we use in a gas utility, the Supercell does just fit our niche.
Well, and what I've noticed too is there is some confusion in electrofusion, mm-hmm. and that's that at certain jobs that both butt fusion and electrofusion can both be used. And I know that mm-hmm. that can confuse people, but it really is simple that some cases one's better than the other, but there's a lot of cases where both can be used.
Sure. You think about if you're stringing pipe, you know, and you're doing lots of quantities, or you're doing your boring pipe, you know, butt fusion is the go-to. But then you think about the tie-ins where you're trying to connect branches or laterals, and you think about in the size and the weight of the pipe and the thickness of the wall, and you're trying to get a butt fusion machine in the hole, or you're trying to perform this lineup. So there's lots of work techniques that use electrofusion, especially for those connections that gives our operators a better environment and just allows them to make that joint successful every time by using electrofusion.
One of the most respected experts in the field, Ed Cooper, is our guest on our ISCO Insights podcast. And I want to ask, we produced the blog on the Highland Supercell. We also had one recently on sustainability. And part of the thought of that blog is we can talk about being green all we want, but it's just talk. And until you act, that really has no value. That's kind of where this electrofusion and especially the Highland Supercell comes in. How important is that moving forward in your industry to have some awareness of what we need to do to be sure we're kind of taking care of things? We just had Earth Day last weekend. Sure. It's important to everybody.
Yeah, so as a gas utility and equipment that we use, we have to think about the steps that we're taking to limit that and take credit for it. A lot of times when we do natural things, like the Supercell to me, wasn't driven for emissions reduction, but when you think about it as a package, we all should be taking credit for that.
Yeah,
that should be first and foremost. I think also using electrofusion and a bubble tight, you know, 100-year connection also prevents leaks.
Yeah,
and emissions from lost and unaccounted for gas.
Yeah,
and I think moving forward, we're using inverters on trucks. We're using LED lights that you can charge at the office and they'll last all night on a project. That's just reduction of an internal combustion engine running.
Yeah, and I know as HDP, from an ISCO standpoint, as a 50 to 100 year solution, that certainly, as long as the fusion's performed correctly, you don't interrupt things. It's kind of nice too when the convenience meets the sustainability and they meet there in the middle, because we certainly want to be efficient in everything we do, but you have to be mindful of having that sustainability link. And so when you can do both, it really is a pretty good feeling.
That's right.
Yeah. So your work with ISCO, we've had an opportunity to do a few jobs with you, and you in particular spoke about the Highland Supercell processor, but talk a little bit to your experiences working with ISCO.
Yeah. So kind of like I've spoke to a legacy CenterPoint company, I worked with a legacy ISCO company, and then as ISCO came around with their Highland tooling, and then the Supercell, and we just find more and more solutions with ISCO. It is very convenient for us, for Indiana, Ohio, that ISCO is in Louisville, Kentucky. So we have offices right across the river in Clarksville. We have offices in Dayton, Ohio, and it just seems to be just nested perfectly for us, for our Indiana, Ohio territory. Also say and you know, we all respond to change. And so we had new rule came out from PHMSA about equipment inspection.
Sure.
192.756. And so we were reading through that and looking at what we can do to follow the rule. And we just need a turnkey solution. We just need someone to come in. Our operations guys are always just busy, and it's the unplanned busy, the phone calls, a car ran over a station, you know, public stuff, and it's just unplanned, kind of sometimes controlled chaos.
Yeah.
ISCO came in and performed all of our 192.756 equipment inspections. Not only did we meet the PHMSA code, what we found is we became more best practice. Mm. Not only did we have some equipment that passed, we had some that said, well, you know, it meets it.
Yeah.
But there is opportunity to improve here. And I think as you look across, when ISCO went to Minnesota and did work for CenterPoint up there, we just became more efficient. We eliminated tooling.
Sure.
We got more focused on the tools that we used. The tools got better. It was just a great experience.
Yeah, it's been a good partnership. Let's look at the future. We kind of touched on it, but where does the future of electrofusion lie? What advances can you kind of foresee as we let you speculate into the future and see what you can move forward with?
I would say that the future is the common standard that is actually adopted by all manufacturers, and that's our goal. And you know, if you, like I said, I use the TR33 to 2620. Well, there's a PPI document, TR49, and there's a Municipal Utilities Board document on electric fusion. And to have now an ASTM standard, which I'm way behind on. So those that are listening to this that know me know I am behind on getting this out. I think we're on like draft 16. But to actually bring five or six electric fusion manufacturers in with a dozen users and an international body like ASTM, and to have an agreed upon standard that could potentially be incorporated into PHMSA or anyone else, I think that's the biggest advancement. Technology-wise, it's commonly known, and it's a standard product that's had success for all these years. I don't know. If it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's some tapping, new stuff coming with tapping and stopping, and using electrofusion to do some in-service where some conventional heat fusion would have some concern. You never know what's going to come.
All right. Well, Ed, we really appreciate your time. Ed Cooper from CenterPoint Energy. Just anything else in general you'd like to add?
No, I don't know that I've ever been on a podcast and done this. But I really appreciate the opportunity. Really enjoy the work that I do. I like the industry. I never would have dreamed, coming from elevators and hoisting, to be in this industry that just so passionate about it. And my involvement through AGA and ASTM and the leadership roles I've had in both of those organizations I'm just glad to be here.
Well, I can see eye to eye with the career path change. I can identify with that, and it has been a pleasure. And I can't thank you enough for the time you've taken. Such a respected member of this industry, it's phenomenal to get your insight on this subject. We thank you.
Thank you.
Ed Cooper, our guest, we thank you so much for joining our ISCO Insights podcast. We remind you to take a look at the blog on the Highland Supercell processor. And, of course, our webinar is Thursday, April 27th. And if you missed out on that, it is always available on our website at isco-pipe.com. Check on the Resources tab, and you can learn all you need to know about the world of HDPE. And in this particular case, our monthly focus on electrofusion. Again, we thank Ed Cooper for joining us. Look forward to talking to you next time on ISCO Insights Podcast.